Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Hey, Craig. How's it going?
So, Tom, here's a thought. I believe that the person who designs a toilet is more of an experienced designer than me.
Welcome to Opacity, a podcast about working in design.
That's a bold statement.
Do you agree?
Well, convince me. How do you? That's a bold statement, so...
Okay. I mean, it brings us to really a fundamental question of what is experience design? I think you have called yourself an experience designer.
I think we all have.
I have. Some people have called everybody a UX designer, right?
Yeah.
Like literally everybody who exists in the world has a place within UX design. Is that a thing we can say?
We can debate it anyway.
It's a perspective that one can have.
Yes.
Yes.
Affirmative.
Okay.
Affirmative.
Okay.
Okay. So it's a bold statement that you said there. So people who design toilets, how are they more of an experience designer than what we call ourselves UX or experience designers?
It has to do with the fundamental idea of what are experiences. The fact that the reality of experience designers, though they have a role in designing to improve people's experience of using, like at least in the sort of framework that is UX design right now, is digital product focused. But digital products are not, I mean, sure, we spend a shitload of time in digital products, but it's not life, like, right? Like I'm trying to use an app to reduce my time in my phone, and I think I'm down to like the lowest I hit was like 1 hour and 7 minutes last week, which is pretty good. I think comparatively that's pretty good.
The irony can't be lost in you there though. You're using an app to track how much you're using apps. It's kind of meta, isn't
it? I'm using my phone.
It's quite meta.
That aside, we have a certain kind of audacity or sort of self-designated importance, I think, in our industry. Well, specifically like speaking to people who work in UX design or who want to work in UX design or have worked in UX design or whatever. We have a certain level of self-importance that I think creates a level of bullshit in our career, or in our industry, that should be reined in, I think. Should be questioned, should be talked about, should be sort of figured out why we feel so important mm-hmm. when we're just designing digital products. And sure, digital products are more and more ever present, and they will continue to be, whether that's a good or bad thing. That's something that...
But they're not as useful as a toilet. And they can't replace a toilet.
Everybody uses a toilet. Right, there's different types of toilets around the world.
Yeah, I was just going to say that
everyone uses
Westerners use toilet seats. Yeah, but
even like there are different types of toilets. Fair enough. But regardless of that, the designing of the toilet experience is a critical thing, and it's something that it affects. Like smells are a concern, sounds are a concern, temperature is a concern. Temperature both of the room, but also the seat.
Yep.
If there's spaces in the doors, like I've heard comments of cracks in the window, the door that you can see through.
So you're talking about like toilet seats in homes or toilet seats everywhere?
I mean, it's a different context in every case. It's a different experience. The experience of using the toilet at work is a very different experience than using it at home, right?
Absolutely.
And like that context needs to be considered. Then are there people nearby? Are the people far away? Are you in solitude? Are you really in solitude, or are you sort of, it's a pseudo solitude? Like we could talk about this for much longer than probably anybody wants to hear. But the point is that I don't think anyone designing toilets is thinking of themselves as an experienced designer.
No.
Is that a fair point?
I would say it is. As you were talking about those points there, and you're talking about you're alluding to the kind of environment that you're in. I think the person who designed many of the toilets that we probably use is, with the exception of maybe home or, domestic toilets, is probably not thinking, they're thinking more on practicalities of how easy it is to clean and maintain and all that type of stuff. They're probably not poring over the details of like, how can we make this the most comfortable toilet that anyone has ever sat on? It's a functional thing, I think. Utility.
But I think you really notice this point when a bathroom experience is badly designed because it's cold, it's silent, the seat is square.
Right, okay.
There's one there. I can show you.
Okay. Security is another thing.
Security is huge.
How comfortable do you actually feel there? Do you feel safe?
Are the locks on all of the bathroom doors consistent? Is there a consistent design system for the locks?
Yeah.
Often no. Like, there's a lot of design elements to that experience that I think are neglected, that, you know, makes me question, you know, thinking about form styles, thinking about hover states. Like, it all feels so trivial when you think about it compared to
real world
something like a toilet or something like a shoe.
Yeah, like, okay, yeah.
A sneaker.
Things that you wear all day, every day, and they have to wear and tear over a long period of time. Yeah, okay, that's interesting. All right, I take the point about experience design, and I do take the point around the kind of self-congratulatory, you know, patting yourself on the back that designers do. I think in the industry, we're in a kind of an echo chamber of sorts. A lot of times you go to conferences and it's designers talking to other designers, and the line is like, as designers, we should be doing X, or we should be doing Y, and we have the power to change the world and all this type of stuff. And it's very like holding yourself up in a pedestal, and, you know, maybe it's not intended that way, but quite often you get a bit like tired of hearing it when you're at conferences with people going on about how great it is as a designer and how we can change the world. But when we're talking about experience design, and as we were saying, we use the word experience. We throw it around willy-nilly, I think, you know. I was recently watching the documentary on Netflix, Abstract, around the different designers. Saw it before, but I came back to it again. And one of the designers on there, Ez Devlin, she designs stage experience, was maybe what you could call them. And when I was watching this, I was like, this is experience design, when I saw what she was doing. Because she would completely transform a theater space into something. It's, if you go to see a play, there's a general convention that you got to work with, and it's very limited what you can do with the stage and the kind of props and all that type of thing to make it very engaging. You kind of know what to expect. Whereas what she was doing was just crazy, really creative, really bold. She was very audacious and driven by the looks of it from the documentary, but also just the results were just, they looked amazing. I just wanted to be there and kind of experience them for myself.
And think about, I mean, the in a digital world, like, you think about that, you think about the experience of being in a theater and someone who's well done, like the lighting is perfect, the sound is perfect, the temperature is perfect. Every aspect of it has been designed, compared to someone who's made, like, think about the best website you've seen in the past month. I can think of really interestingly designed websites that probably took a lot of creative power, a lot of development power, just a ton of work, ton of thought, ton of time, and I gave it like 3 minutes and then I moved on and I was sitting at my desk and just looked at the website. It's like, that's cool, and then I moved on with the day. Like, that's not so, like, if
I agree,
if
I,
that's
I,
the epitome of experience design, is these, well, I mean, then you get into the whole functional versus like nice to look at, aesthetically pleasing sort of aspects of design. To me, like, that functionality is obviously like the central piece of that, and a tool that helps me do a thing is much more important than something that is extremely creative and like then throws into question, like, to what extent is experience design actually a creative field?
Good point. And on that, on the example they're using of those websites, the ones that generally get pushed around, a lot of time it just feels like a novelty to me. You know, if I click on a link and go to a URL and it says something like, you know, best experience with headphones on or something, I'm probably going to back out. Like, you know, there's loading going on and that kind of stuff. I think a lot of stuff just relies on transitions and, you know, video and all the type of stuff. And they can be good experiences. Like, I remember, I think it was the New York Times or something did something a few years ago around like snowstorms, and it was very engaging. It was a very good way of presenting a long form content in an engaging way, as opposed to a lot of stuff, as you're saying, a lot of those websites that get thrown around, it's eye candy, you know, it's flashy, and it's ultimately something I'm like, oh, great, yeah, boom, next.
Yeah, it's kind of, it can be gimmicky, it can be like, it's nice, it's well done. There's no question that there was skill and craft put into those things, but when the output, when it doesn't leave you with anything. Like you remember that New York Times thing from how
I think it was New York Times, at least 6 years ago.
6 years ago, you remember a web page from 6 years ago.
Yeah,
that's an impact, right?
Yeah,
that's an experiential impact.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you maybe remember some amazing theater show you went to, or what, some travel experience that you had, or like actual experience, like real, like human experience, not pushing a button on an app.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, absolutely. Like when you're saying that, like the last couple of times that Muse have come to Ireland, I went to see them and they were very good. The drones tour was particularly impressive. They had the whole tour was called Drones, and they actually had drones flying around these like orbs, and they'd go in and out sequence. They were flying around the whole time in the gig, and then they just every now and again they just line up, they do something in sequence, and then go back to kind of working in a kind of a chaotic manner. It was mesmerizing, you know, very impressive. And that on top of the music that they're playing, their stage presence, that created an experience, as you're saying, that you don't get from filling out a form field on an app.
Yeah. But it's trying to balance. I feel like, you know, it's the yes and no. It's like, I love it and I hate it. These are aspects of, I think, our industry that, like, I love them. The idea of experience design at its core is why I got into this in the start. Because it's about something deeper. It's not just about the user interface. It's about something deeper, and it's about the people using it.
That's important. That is important, because it is an experience that you're creating in a sense, okay? Because, well, you can throw the, I don't know if experience is the right title to, or right word to use, but products that we use, generally, like designers like ourselves, are drawn to kind of like digital product design, which goes hand in hand. The user experience is a large portion of that. Generally, we're working for companies, you know, a lot of us are, we're creating things that are useful for people in their daily lives. Like, it doesn't have the kind of crash bang wallop of rock and roll show or something like that. Like, you know, building a stage for Beyonce or Kanye West or something like that. But it's useful. It's a much more ambient kind of a usefulness, and maybe is making something that people use in their daily lives increasing an experience, or, you know, is it making a better experience for them compared to a shit experience?
It makes me think of I don't know who said this. Somebody said it. Maybe you know. The best interface is no interface, I think was is a quote.
That someone
important probably said.
Some clever person.
I mean, just listen to you now. It sounds like is the best experience in our space, at least, no experience. Like if you use a thing, let's say a digital tool, a digital product that is a tool to do a thing, the less someone experiences anything other than completing that thing that they need to do, like everything else is just a failed attempt at actually designing an experience for them. It's like get them in and out, build them a hammer that drives the nail with one hit, and you've done your job as an experience designer. The desire to use the tool as little as possible to achieve the result is sort of the experience we're trying to create, which is a weird state to be in, because it's like, okay, make it so utilitarian that it's seamless, which no one would disagree with. That's a thing we try to do, but so seamless that it doesn't even exist.
Like, totally ambient.
Yeah. Is that the future of experience design, is design or digital product design or whatever you call it? Is it designing things that don't exist to people? Like, they're not perceived by the people using them.
I get you.
They're so well designed. It's just like an axon firing, and that's the.
It's a pure. it's a frictionless interaction,
which is weird.
It is weird
because that's not. Maybe it makes time for more human experiences, which are the really important experiences.
Because I think on that point that you're making, I think it's interesting because it's almost. John made his talk about computational versus classical designers, or classical versus computational designers, kind of comes to mind when you're talking about that, because the classical type of designer, as he would categorize it, and it made a lot of sense to me, is like, you know, you're talking about like industrial designers, architects, you know, classical graphic designers who are producing physical artifacts, and they pore over the details, and it is a very, like, what they're designing, their intent is kind of seen through to the final product. You know, and it could be done, you know, mass production, but the chair that they're creating has been, they know every inch of it, they know all the details, and that's how they intended it to be used. And it's, you know, it's a thing of beauty, it's a work of art. It's almost more art than design in a way. Whereas computational designers, which is kind of more like what UX and product designers do, is you're designing something and you know you're going to be wrong. You know, the classical design, producing something like a chair, it's inflexible in the sense that when it gets produced, there's all this tooling that's created to produce these, mass produce these products. and it has to be absolutely right. There's very little room for error. So, because the tools that get built have to build the product that goes live, and there's no area for change for phase two or software upgrade. Yeah. Whereas what we're doing has that element, you know, and it's, I think as in doing that, in being in that world, where you know you're creating something that people are going to use. Some people are going to find it okay. Some people are going to have issues in it. You know you're going to be wrong, you know, and you know you're going to have to refine it. What you put out there, version one, you know is not going to be the right answer. Mm-hmm. So there's more, I don't know, does it require more of a humility? Is there less ego there? Because you know someone else is going to be showing you. You're going to be sitting at the other side of a user test going, oh my God, I can't believe they can't use the thing that I just designed for them.
Yeah, I think this whole, looking back at this design legacy that we sort of claim some ownership of, even though our world of design is so different. But to me, it feels like there's, you know, that the craft and then the end product is sort of that, maybe a way to describe the classical thing. There's the craft, there's the craftsperson who has the craft, and they are the one that hold that craft, and therefore they can produce the product. Mm-hmm. And that's the end. Mm-hmm. And then you better buy the product because it's the best designed product around, because this person is so good. That doesn't really exist. Like nothing is designed by a single person in our world. So it's there's the craft of the designer, but that has to fit into a process, which is the process of a company, the process of a designer with developers or designers and researchers or everyone at the table, like, and plus the sort of the business that supports that thing that has its own strategy that this product has to fit within. Like there's a complex web of things that need to be considered, which, you know, when the Eames chair was being designed, weren't probably that relevant, you know, even though it's a product that has lasted and has this like elevated status as a really good chair. Yeah. And then, so there's the craft and there's the process, and then there's the end product, which is the thing we're producing, the thing we're actually trying to do. And then, like you said, the iterations on that, the improvements on that, the awareness that whatever we're making is not going to be the right solution. Mm-hmm. Like just to be humble, like you said, be humble about what we can actually achieve, how well we can know the people who we're actually designing for, but with an openness to just keep improving. And that's a really like exciting place to be. Whereas it's not the artistic process of crafting something and putting out in the world and take it or leave it. This is the thing. Like you better respect this thing that I made, as opposed to this is a thing. As soon as people start not like downloading it and then bouncing off because they're not interested in it, then you know you have a problem and you got to fix it. Yeah. Either you got to dump it or you got to improve it. And like that's a very different space to be in. Like it's hard to even think, are these both design, like are these both the same discipline, like are they still under the same umbrella, you know?
It's a good question,
because it's a really different world.
It really
is like a different mind space, I think, to live within.
It is. I think, you know, the example you used there, the Eames chair or that kind of thing, like there's an aura around, and you know, got characters like that, or even, you know, when it comes to, you know, like Paul Rand or Saul Bass and stuff, like there's an aura around that person, and there's a prestige in the work that they do and a prestige in getting to work with those people as well. So like before you mentioned, like, you know, Paul Rand coming in and saying, this is the identity that I've done for you. There's one version of it. Yeah. There's not two. This is it. And there's an ego and a kind of a ballsiness to that. Probably that worked for him, you know, but it is kind of, that wouldn't work for everybody, you know? And it's kind of like, it's almost like Picasso going, here, I've made this painting for you, and it's the aura around me. You've got a Picasso now, you know? It's much harder to turn down that, you know? And the first experience with a Paul Rand or a Saul Bass piece of graphic design might not be, oh, I don't get it, but this person knows their shit so much. This guy is, or this person is a god, you know? So I kind of got to go, yeah, we probably should go with this. It's probably going to stand the test of time. Mm-hmm. And there's that prestige, I think, that's not necessarily in digital product design, because it shapes and changes so much.
And I feel like that's a strength. Like it's not in any way kind of a bash on what we're doing. I think it's actually like a strength, and it's a maybe an evolution of this of this craft in our age and for the medium that we're working in, like it's a good thing. I think it's a great thing.
I think there's a balance though as well. I think there should be a tension between the humility and also a little bit of ego. Like a little, I think completely removing ego is not really, you're going to have, it's very easy to become completely passive. Yeah. And say, well, you know, we'll just do this thing. We'll run up by our users and they'll tell us,
yeah.
You know, we'll test it with them and go, oh no, well they said they want this, this and this. And, you know, it's obviously good to listen to your users, but if that's your process, as in just like prototype something, test it and let your user tell you what you should be doing. Mm-hmm. As interaction designers and as user UX designers, it's important to have to, like, when you get to that stage where you're testing with someone, even if it's quick, and you know, you should have all these, you should have have made all the considerations that there's an intent there. Mm-hmm. You're not just flying, winging it and letting the user tell you exactly what you need to design.
Yeah. So where does the ego come in? Like, where is ego beneficial?
Well, say she's more of a classical designer, as Devon and some of those people at that. I think having a vision and trying to push that through as well. Now, not so much that you bulldoze over the kind of facts that are coming back to you or common sense that what you're doing is the wrong thing. But I think having some kind of vision that you want to push through. So you don't just completely become this passive, reactive person in the whole process, that you're like, no, there's a hypothesis there maybe. Okay, if you look at people, like if you look at kind of game-changing products over the last few years, say Uber, for example, it always gets thrown around. Like, so the inventor of Uber saw a niche and he had a vision, like, you know, this doesn't work. It takes a really brave person to do that. So not just him, but, you know, Airbnb and many different things that kind of game changers. Like, you could very easily go and start doing some research with someone and they could just go, oh no, well, I just want an easier way to call the company. They, you know, they wouldn't be able to, not necessarily tell you all the ideas that you need. So I think there's a certain amount of bravery and ego, a hint of ego, but not so much that you don't, or not so little that you give up, but not so much that you bulldoze over common sense.
Yeah, I think maybe it makes me think of kind of another topic for probably another discussion, but on like sort of design leadership and what is that thing? Because it's sort of I feel like that's something that's maybe thrown around as like, but I'm not sure it's clear to people. What does it mean to be a design leader?
Yeah.
Especially in this area of experience design where the boundaries are so vague, like the definition of it as a field is so vague. What does a leader mean? What does a leader do? Like day to day, what's the job description of a design leader? That's, I think, probably a topic for another day, but I think...
But on the topic, sorry, on like visionary leaders, Steve Jobs is an obvious one. So he wasn't the person who sat down and built the iPhone, but there was a vision and the drive to go, no, I want this thing, you know, I'm going to push it. There's an ego there. We need to do this. Kind of push yourselves, stretch as much as you can. And without that, without people like him, we wouldn't have those great leaps forward, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, if you think of...
For all his faults.
Yeah. And if you think of the experience of Apple as a brand that is experienced in a way, and that could be like a bit fluffy language, but I think it's a thing. Like their brand has an identity that's palpable. When you open an Apple product, you feel that.
I don't have the fluffiness for it anymore, but that's probably another conversation.
Like Steve Jobs, I don't think he'd call himself an experience designer, even though he has, you know, there's quotes that obviously UX designers point to as a sort of validation for us as an industry. But his leadership led to this creating this brand. So that vision, I think, is a huge, huge piece of the puzzle. So with like all these things in mind, which we're kind of picking at UX a bit, but it can handle it. Even with all of this that other people are aware, like this is not a new conversation to have, right? UX is still a desirable career path to go down. Mm-hmm. The work is interesting. The work is exciting. The work is fulfilling. I think there's a lot of obviously I'm slightly biased here, but I do think it's one of the great careers to be involved in right now, especially with all the change and all that. But there does seem to be a sense of commodification coming, or I think particularly I kind of get triggered when I hear everybody speaking for UX, like as somebody who calls himself a UX designer, but then seeing literally everybody else being able to vouch for what is good UX, what is bad UX, even though are those even things that you can say, because experiences are very personal, individual things, and you can't say, because like, I don't like that form is too many pixels wide, like that's therefore that's bad UX. No, that's not bad UX, it's just you want a shorter form. Like it's not a thing,
subjective,
like, yeah, it's very subjective, and when everybody speaks for it and everybody can judge it, like everybody can judge it for themselves, but to judge it for design decisions and to then become a designer in the process, then what's left for the actual person who has the role of the UX designer? Like, are they even relevant anymore? Should they just become a manager and just close up Sketch, close up the day, and just worry about managing a team of UI designers and researchers, and you know, just sort of coordinate the orchestra, and conduct the orchestra, and you know, call it a day and let everybody else have a say in experience.
Okay, so we're talking about user experience design, and the term UX, I think within the last 5 years or so in within the whole industry, those two letters are almost like dollar signs. So you know, cash money, as soon as you put that in your LinkedIn profile, it's become a bit more mainstream now. So there's a bit more understanding when it comes to like the C-level execs, like CEOs and that kind of stuff. It's reached a level of maturity, I think, in the industry where it's got that, you know, you don't need to have to explain and sell the idea of user experience to people so much. But like that, there's a lot of money to be made from it. You know, you probably see it yourself. You'd be on YouTube and you're getting ads for, you know, Udemy courses and stuff like that, and all these other different courses that are talking about, you know, become a UX designer in X amount of to weeks or months. Yeah. And it's commodified. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of money to be made in the education side of it, for the agencies that are selling it, for the designers themselves who are kind of framing themselves as UX designers, even like moving from sort of adjacent fields and just sort of change the job title on their resume to kind of up their earning potential. Like, it's a thing. And but because of the sort of lack of definition of the industry, that's going to continue. But is it kind of a bubble? Like, does it have to pop? I mean, it's in some ways it may be already deflating, because a lot of people who were previous UX designers are now product designers, or now maybe specializing in UX research, or specializing in some other area, or they're getting into leadership positions and being design directors or UX managers or whatever. Like, things are changing, and is the UX designer, is the future of UX design going to be as it is understood now? I don't think it is as it was understood a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. It changes like company to company, is obviously very different.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's almost like is it a gold rush that everybody's going to run to? Or it's probably been a gold rush for some time, but when does that end?
Yeah.
When does that bubble burst?
When does the signal become noise?
Ooh. When did the chickens come to roost? When do the eggs crack? When does the camel's back break?
Okay. Well, I definitely think there's has to be some kind of concern there with like the oversaturation of the market, you know, but then again, I think the skills that good designers have will be valuable for a long time to come. And I think there's, you know, many people can have a title, they can do courses, and it's like anything, there'll always be a separation of, you know, good designers will stand out, you know, where there could be a lot of noise out there, a lot of people with the same title.
Yeah. And I think on the idea of saturation, just go anywhere in the internet and you will see endless examples of badly designed digital presences, digital products, mm-hmm. websites, throves and throves and of badly designed apps. So there's no shortage of work. So even with this kind of apparent saturation of the industry, there's so much work to be done, mm-hmm. that there's probably not enough people on earth to actually do it, especially as I don't know what's the data on how many apps are made every day, how many new websites are launched each day. You know, there's just so much to be done that, you know, everybody, maybe there is enough space for everybody to be a UX designer. And it's, it's just the bigger table. We just got to expand the table and
cash money for everybody.
Yeah, everybody.
It's the golden age.
It's the golden age. Experience design is obviously the thread going throughout this, and there's sort of something we had sort of had in mind when we were thinking about this topic: is it valuable? Is experience design valuable as a thing, or is it mostly bullshit? Like, are designers who are designing non-digital spaces, like, are they just service designers if they're designing for services? Are service designers the real UX designers? Like, are they the real experience designers? Are the shoe and the toilet and the stage lighting person, are they the real heroes for experience design? Like, I don't know. Or is there enough space at the table for us all to sit and eat of the good fruits that are experience design?
For the time being, I think things will change. Automation. The
table break.
Yeah. Design ops, the design systems, all those types of things will minimize the need for a lot of the tasks that we designers do on a daily basis.
There's a bold statement in there. So
yeah.
Design systems are going to put us out of a job?
Sure. It could well be, you know. So it could be the case that you need, if you have something to work from, the design system, do you need, like, is it enough to have a team of people or a smaller team of people who can just manage the day-to-day and just in a governance role, not heavy-duty design? I mean, the patterns and stuff that we use are a level of maturity now that it's possible that most of the digital design problems have been solved.
Have they been solved?
It's a question. From a UI perspective.
Well, I mean, they've been solved. Well, they've been solved maybe on certain products, but on the whole, no. I mean, there's just so much terribly designed products out there.
Is that the result of bad designers, though? The people who are doing the design, as opposed to, like, is the knowledge out there that they should be just, if they just gather it, you know, or if it was a machine that could scour all the UI patterns and could optimize them, is it just the fact that they haven't put together the pieces that could improve that experience?
You know, that argument tells me, like we said before, or I said before, like, is UX actually a creative field? And if a robot can, you know, an AI can come in and scour the internets for all of the possible patterns, sort them, group them, weed out the things that are unusable based on some criteria, then and make us irrelevant, then is that bot creative, or are we shitting ourselves?
It's the Skynet for designers, you know, like, some kind of AI tool that can scour all the user research, all the design systems, and optimize them all into one.
But then if that makes us irrelevant, then UX design is not a creative field, because if a machine can do it, like, machine isn't creative. I don't know. Maybe that's not a. Maybe machines are creative. I don't know.
But what is creativity, though? This is a nerd discussion. We'll take this offline. That's for another podcast.
Yeah, but I think it's worth it to ponder: are we actually in a creative industry if we can be automated?
Yeah, I think it is creative. I think the initial creation of them requires creativity, but then the kind of gathering and optimizing of them in a mechanical way is just kind of sorting existing things.
So are we just sorters? Are we just glorified sorters?
No. You might be. I'm not.
Thanks so much for listening to Opacity. You can find us on all of the places you get your podcasts. I think we're up pretty much everywhere. So check us out. Search Opacity. We'll be there. Tom, where can people connect with you if they want to?
You can get me on Twitter at TomCDesign. As you were saying, Craig, we're aiming to get these podcasts out one episode, maybe every 2 weeks or so. Where can people find you?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram at Craig5446. And also I do write a bit on Medium. You can search me by name, Craig Phillips. But I'm also at medium.com/@Craig5446. All right, so we will talk to you very soon. Thanks so much for listening.
Until next time.